What are people looking at up in the sky? Clarissa Dalloway asks Lucy, reaching her own front door and stepping inside. The hall of the house was as cool as a church. The door closed, and Mrs. Dalloway felt the life of her house wrap comfortably around her. Bending her head gratefully over the hall table, she took the note with the telephone message on it, while Lucy stood beside her, trying to explain.
"Mr. Dalloway, madam,"
Clarissa read the note.
"Lady Bruton wishes to know if Mr. Dalloway will have lunch with her today."
"Mr. Dalloway, madam, told me to tell you he would be having lunch out," said Lucy.
"Oh dear," said Clarissa, and Lucy shared her disappointment and felt the understanding between them. Clarissa trembled, for the shock of Lady Bruton asking Richard to lunch without her shook the moment. Millicent Bruton, whose lunch parties were said to be extraordinarily amusing, had not asked her. Simple jealousy could not separate her from Richard, but she feared time itself and read on Lady Bruton's face, as if it had been cut in stone, the fading of her own life year by year. She put down the note and began to go slowly upstairs, as if she had left a party and stood alone against the awful night, instead of against the stare of this soft June morning. She paused by the open window on the stairs. She felt herself suddenly older, dried up, her body and brain now failed, because Lady Bruton, whose lunch parties were said to be extraordinarily amusing, had not asked her. So she went upstairs, paused at the window, came to her attic room. Here was an emptiness at the heart of life, an attic room. White sheets were stretched tight around the narrow bed, for Richard had to stay so late at the House of Commons that she must sleep undisturbed, he said, after her illness. So her room was an attic, and the bed narrow, with a book beside it. She knew what was missing in her. It was something central, something warm, a warm wave that broke up the cold contact of man and woman, or between women too. She had a coldness about her, which attached itself to her like a sheet. Yet there were times she did feel it, only for a moment, but it was enough, a sudden spark which spread and rushed through her. But this question of love, she thought, taking off her yellow hat and laying it on the bed, this falling in love with women, like Sally Seton, had not that, after all, been love? Sally sat on the floor. That was her first memory of Sally, smoking a cigarette. Where could it have been? At some party, she supposed, for Clarissa remembered the man she was with telling her who it was. He told her that Sally's parents did not get on. How that shocked her! The idea that one's parents should quarrel! But all that evening, she could not take her eyes off Sally. It was an extraordinary beauty of the kind she most admired. Dark, large-eyed, with that quality Clarissa wished she had herself, that she could say anything, do anything. Perhaps it was that summer that Sally came to stay at Boughton, rushing off after some argument at home, walking in quite unexpectedly one evening after dinner. It upset poor Aunt Helena so much that she never forgave her. That night, she and Sally had sat up half the night talking. It was Sally who made her feel, for the first time, how little she knew. She knew nothing about sex, nothing about social problems. That summer, they sat, hour after hour, talking in her bedroom about life, about how they were going to change the world, though the ideas were Sally's, of course. Sally's power was amazing. There was what she did with flowers, for example. At Boughton, there were always stiff little bunches all the way down the dinner table. But Sally picked all sorts of flowers from the garden that had never been seen together, cut their heads off, and made them swim on the top of water in bowls. The effect was extraordinary. Then, one night, she forgot her towel and ran along the corridor naked, shocking Aunt Helena. Indeed, she did shock people. The strange thing, looking back, was how pure her feeling for Sally was. It was not like one's feeling for a man. She could remember standing in her bedroom saying aloud, "She is beneath this roof." The words meant nothing at all to her now, but she could remember going cold with excitement, doing her hair, and now the old feeling began to come back to her as she put her hand up to her hair. It was a feeling of pure joy, coming down to dinner in a white dress to meet Sally Seton, who seemed all light. After dinner, Aunt Helena wandered off. Sally stood by the window, talking in her beautiful voice to Papa, who had begun to be attracted to her without intending to be. He never forgot lending her one of his books and finding that she had left it out in the rain. Peter Walsh was there, and old Joseph Breitkopf, who came every summer to teach Clarissa German. Suddenly, Sally said, "What a pity to sit indoors!" And they went out into the garden. Peter and Joseph Breitkopf talked about German music. She and Sally walked a little behind them. Then came the most beautiful moment of her whole life. Passing a stone pot with flowers in it, Sally stopped, picked a flower, kissed her on the lips. The whole world seemed to have turned upside down. The others disappeared. She was alone with Sally, and she felt that she had been given some extraordinary treasure, like a diamond, and told just to keep it, not to look at it. Then old Joseph and Peter turned to face them. "Stargazing," said Peter. "It was shocking. It was horrible. It was like running into a stone wall in the darkness." But she did not mind for herself. She felt only how Sally was being attacked. She saw Peter's jealousy, his wish to break into their friendship. But Sally continued on her way, undefeated. She made old Joseph tell her the names of the stars. Never had she admired Sally so much. She stood there. She listened to Joseph telling Sally the names of the stars. "Oh, this horror," she said to herself, as if she had known all the time that something would interrupt her moment of happiness. When she thought of Peter, she always thought of their quarrels, because she wanted him to think well of her, perhaps. Yet how much she owed Peter later. He gave her words that guarded her life, like sentimental. A book was sentimental. An opinion was sentimental. Perhaps she was sentimental now, to be thinking of the past. What would he think, she wondered, when he came back? Would he think that she had grown older? Would he say that, or would she see him thinking it? It was true. Since her illness, her hair had turned almost white. Sitting at her table, in front of the mirror, an icy shock went through her. She was not old yet. She had just passed her 51st birthday. Months and months of her 52nd year were still untouched. And, as if to catch the falling moment, Clarissa plunged into the very heart of it, the moment of this June morning, as she gazed into the small pink face of the woman who was to give a party that very night, of Clarissa Dalloway,
of herself. How many million times she had seen her face in the mirror, always with the same tightness of her lips. That was herself, pointed, like an arrow, and certain. That was herself when, with effort, she gathered the parts together into one centre, one woman who was there for others. She had helped the lonely, perhaps, and young people who were grateful to her. She had tried always to be the same, never showing a sign of all the other sides of her failings, doubts, and jealousies, like this of Lady Bruton not asking her to lunch. She brushed her hair at last. Now, where was her dress? Her evening dresses hung in the cupboard. Clarissa, plunging her hand into the softness, gently took out the silvery green dress and carried it to the window to examine it. She had torn it. She remembered someone stepping on the skirt at a party. She would mend it herself. Her servants had too much to do. She would take it downstairs to the drawing room and sew it there, for she needed to check that all was well for the party. It was strange, she thought, pausing at the top of the stairs, how well a woman knows the mood of her house. Quiet, purposeful sounds reached her from downstairs, a brush moving across the floor, voices repeating messages, clean silver bowls and candlesticks being carried on a tray. All was for the party. And Lucy went into the drawing room with her tray and put the huge silver candlesticks on the table. Here the guests would later stand and talk, she thought. And of all those people, her Mrs. Dalloway was the loveliest. "Oh, Lucy," said Mrs. Dalloway, coming into the drawing room. "The silver does look nice." And Lucy stopped at the drawing room door and said very shyly, "Couldn't she help to mend that dress?" "But," said Mrs. Dalloway, "Lucy had more than enough work to do already without that." "But thank you, Lucy. Oh, thank you," said Mrs. Dalloway. And thank you, she went on saying, sitting down on the sofa with the green dress over her knees, grateful to her servants for helping her to be what she wanted, gentle, generous-hearted. Her servants liked her. Now, where was the dress torn? Quiet fell on her as she sewed, gathering the folds of silk smoothly together. So on a summer's day, the waves gather, rise and fall, and the whole world seems to be saying, "That is all. That is all," the heart repeats. "Fear no more." And the body alone listens to the wave breaking, the dog barking, far away, barking and barking. "Good heavens, the front doorbell," cried Clarissa, looking up. She listened. "Mrs. Dalloway will see me," said the grey-haired man in the hall. "Oh, yes, after I've been in India for 5 years, Clarissa will see me," he said, putting Lucy aside very kindly and running upstairs. "Who can it be?" asked Mrs. Dalloway. How shocking it was to be interrupted at 11 o'clock in the morning on the day she was giving a party. She wanted to hide her sewing. Now the door opened and in came... For a second, she could not remember what he was called, being so shocked, so pleased to have Peter Walsh come to visit her without warning. "And how are you?" said Peter Walsh, trembling, taking both her hands and kissing them. "She's grown older," he thought, sitting down beside her. "I shan't tell her, though. She's looking at me," he thought, feeling suddenly embarrassed. He took out a pocket knife and half opened it. "He's exactly the same," thought Clarissa. "He has the same odd look, the same clothes.
He's a little thinner and drier, perhaps, but he looks awfully well, and just the same as he used to. How heavenly it is to see you again, she cried. He had his knife out. That's so like him, she thought. He had only arrived in London last night, he said. And how was everything? How was everybody? Richard? Elizabeth? And what's all this? He said, pointing his knife towards her evening dress. He's very well dressed, thought Clarissa. Yet he always criticises me. Here she is, mending her dress as usual, he thought. All the time I've been working in India, she's been sitting here going to parties, running to the House of Commons and back for Richard. For there's nothing in the world so bad for some women as marriage and having a husband in politics, he thought, growing more and more annoyed. Richard's very well. He's at a government meeting, said Clarissa. And she picked up her sewing and asked did he mind her just finishing what she was doing, for they had a party that night. Which I shan't ask you to, she said. My dear Peter, she said. But it was wonderful to hear her say that, my dear Peter. Indeed, it was all so wonderful. The house, the silver candlesticks, the paintings. Why wouldn't she ask him to her party? He asked. Now he's perfectly charming, of course, thought Clarissa. Now I remember how impossible it was to decide. And why did I decide not to marry him that awful summer? But it's so extraordinary that you should have come this morning, she cried. Do you remember, she said, the French windows at Boughton? I do, he said. And he remembered having breakfast alone, very awkwardly, with her father, who had recently died, and he had not written to her about it. But he had never got on well with old Justin Parry, Clarissa's father. I often wish I'd got on better with your father, he said.
But he never liked anyone who wanted light, my friends, said Clarissa, cross with herself for reminding Peter that he had wanted to marry her.
Of course I wanted to, thought Peter, and was overcome with his own sadness, which rose like a pale moon above a garden. It almost broke my heart, too, he thought. I was more unhappy than I have ever been since. And, as if he were really sitting in the garden at Boughton with Clarissa, he moved a little towards her, raised his hand, let it fall. She seemed to be sitting with him in the moonlight.
Herbert has Boughton now, she said. I never go there now.
Then, just like in a moonlit garden, when one person feels embarrassed that he is already bored, while the other still looks sadly at the moon, so Peter Walsh felt now. He moved his foot, looked at the furniture, said nothing. For why go back to the past like this? Why make him suffer?
Do you remember the lake?
She said suddenly, her voice full of an emotion which caught her heart and made her throat stiff. For she was a child, throwing bread to the ducks, standing between her parents. At the same time, she was a grown woman, coming to her parents by the lake saying, "This is what I've made of my life." And what had she made of it, sitting there sewing this morning with Peter? She looked at Peter Walsh through tears and dried her eyes. Yes, said Peter.
Yes, 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 he said, as if she were bringing something to the surface which hurt him as it rose. Stop, he wanted to cry. For he was not old. His life was not over, not at all. He was only just past 50.
Shall I tell her my news? He thought. But she is too cold, sitting there sewing, he thought. Daisy would look ordinary beside Clarissa, and she would think me a failure, which I am in the Dalloway's eyes, he thought. Oh, yes. He was a failure compared with all this. The beautiful furniture and the silver and the old English paintings. I hate it, he thought. And this has been going on all the time, week after week, while I... And at once, his life seemed to spread out before him. Journeys, quarrels, adventures, relationships with women, and work, work, work. He wrapped his fingers around his knife.
What an extraordinary habit that was, Clarissa thought. Always playing with a knife, always making one feel silly, shallow, empty-minded.
But, like a queen whose guards have fallen asleep and left her unprotected, she commanded her feelings for the things and people she loved to come to her aid. She commanded them all, her life, which Peter hardly knew now, to come and beat off the enemy.
Well, and what's happened to you? She said, challenging Peter to the battle.
He gathered together all sorts of things. His marriage, which he knew nothing at all about, his relationships, his work in India.
Millions and millions of things, he cried.
Clarissa sat very upright.
I am in love, he said,
as if about to lay down flowers before her in the dark.
In love with a girl in India, he said,
now speaking rather dryly to Clarissa Dalloway. He had laid down his flowers. Clarissa would make her judgment.
In love? She said. How could he be dragged under by that monster at his age? His neck is thin, his hands are red, and he is older than me.
But in her heart she felt, he is in love. She sat with her dress on her knee, trembling a little. He was in love, not with her. With some younger woman, of course.
And who is she? She asked.
A married woman, unfortunately, he said. The wife of an officer in the Indian Army. And he smiled as he placed Daisy before Clarissa in this foolish way.
All the same, he is in love, thought Clarissa.
She has, he continued, two small children, a boy and a girl, and I have come over to see my lawyers about the divorce. There they are, Daisy and her children, he thought. Do what you like with them, Clarissa. And with each passing second, it seemed to him that his Daisy and her two small children became more and more lovely as Clarissa looked at them. The woman must make him feel important, thought Clarissa. Peter had been fooled like that all his life. First marrying a girl he met on the boat out to India, now wanting to marry the wife of an officer in the Indian Army. Thank heaven she had refused to marry him. Still, her old friend, her dear Peter, was in love.
But what are you going to do? She asked him.
Oh, some lawyers called Hooper and Greatley were going to arrange it, he said. And he actually cut his fingernails with his knife.
Oh, leave your knife alone, she cried to herself.
It had always annoyed her that he did not have the least idea what anyone else was feeling. And now, at his age, how silly. I know who I am up against, thought Peter, running his finger against his knife. Clarissa and Richard Dalloway, and all the rest of them. But I'll show Clarissa. And then, to his complete surprise, he began to cry, sitting beside her on the sofa, the tears running down his cheeks. And Clarissa had leaned forward, taken his hand, gathered him to her, kissed him. She had actually felt his face on hers before she could control the emotion which rose, then fell, leaving her holding his hand. She felt as she sat back, extraordinarily light-hearted. And all of a sudden it came over her. If I had married him, this joy would have been mine all day. It was all over for her. The sheet was stretched and the bed was narrow. Richard, Richard, she cried, calling to him to protect her, as a sleeper in the night wakes and reaches out a hand in the dark. He is lunching with Lady Bruton, she remembered. He has left me. I am alone forever, she thought, folding her hands on her knee. Peter Walsh had gone to the window and stood with his back to her, blowing his nose, his thin shoulders lifting slightly. Take me with you, thought Clarissa suddenly, as if he were about to leave on some great journey. And then, the next moment, it was as if an exciting play had finished. She had lived a lifetime in it, had run away, had lived with Peter, and now it was over. It was time to move. And as a woman gathers her cloak, her gloves, her bag, and gets up to go out of the theatre into the street, she rose from the sofa and went to Peter. And it was awfully strange, he thought, how she still had the power to make the moon, which he hated, rise over the garden at Boughton. Tell me, he said, taking her by the shoulders. Are you happy, Clarissa? Does Richard... The door opened. Here is my Elizabeth, said Clarissa, emotionally, extravagantly perhaps. How do you do? Said Elizabeth, coming forward. The sound of Big Ben striking the half hour rang out between them with extraordinary force. Hello, Elizabeth, cried Peter, saying, Goodbye, Clarissa, without looking at her, leaving the room quickly, running downstairs and opening the front door. Peter! Peter! Cried Clarissa, following him to the top of the stairs. My party tonight! Remember my party tonight! She cried over the noise of the traffic and all the clocks striking. And as Peter Walsh shut the front door, her voice crying, Remember my party tonight! Sounded very far away.